This is Cale Clark, and this is The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. It's our new mini-series called Bogus or Biblical, The False Gospels and the Real Jesus. And so we talked about in our last episode maybe the most famous false gospel of them all, the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel according to Thomas, quote-unquote. Now, of course, this was not written by Thomas the Apostle. And this is one of those gospels that you hear about in the news, especially leading up to Easter time. There are all kinds of documentaries about Jesus and what really happened to him. And very often you'll hear certain scholars, such as John Dominic Crossan, the former Catholic priest, John Dominic Crossan, who will say all kinds of very interesting things, such as the Gospel of Thomas is a good source of information about Jesus and history. I don't think so, Tim, or I don't think so, Dom, I guess you could say, or Thomas. We're gonna talk a little bit more about the Gospel of Thomas, and then we'll get into some of these other false gospels that make it into the media. But always remember, the news is all about what is new. People are looking for an interesting angle. They're looking for something that will drive clicks and engagement. And so if you start saying, hey, I've got a gospel that the church doesn't want you to know about, or the church didn't include in the Bible, what are they trying to hide from you is the implication. The answer is nothing. The church knows about these gospels. It's nothing new. And there's a reason, folks, why they did not make it into the biblical canon, the list of books in the New Testament. And that's another show for another day, how the canon came to be. But suffice it to say that this is old news. These documents have been known about for quite some time. And even in the Gospel of Luke, Luke in his prologue, and we mentioned this in the last episode, he refers to other lives of Jesus that were written around the time when he was writing his gospel. So again, the gospel according to Thomas is in fact a gospel written by a Gnostic sect. This is not even a Catholic or Christian document at all. In fact, what we're dealing with here is a different religion altogether. Now, it does talk about Jesus, yes, but that doesn't mean that it's a Christian document. And don't forget, the Gospel of Thomas was written by a Gnostic group. And this comes from the Greek word gnosis, which means knowledge. And essentially, in the early church, certain groups split off from the church, if indeed they were ever part of the church in the first place, saying, we have the real truth about Jesus. We have secret knowledge about Jesus. And in fact, the Gospel of Thomas starts off by saying, these are the secret words that the living Jesus spoke, and that Judas, even Thomas, wrote, because they call him Judas Thomas, Thomas the Apostle. So right from the get-go, they're trying to say, we have the inside scoop, and you must join our little group in order to figure it out. Much, much different from the Catholic point of view and public revelation that we have in the Catholic Universal Church. And again, as we spoke about before, some hallmarks of Gnosticism, they generally believe that the physical world, the creation, all matter is evil. You say, what's the matter? And it's all bad, according to them. The physical body is bad. Human sexuality, marriage between husband and wife, we don't really want this. And in fact, even the whole Old Testament should really be thrown out, because this is a lower God, a demiurge. This is not the God of Jesus Christ, who created this wicked, visible, and physical universe, according to their way of thinking. This is not, of course, the Catholic Christian point of view, in which God says, everything I've created is good. If you read the book of Genesis, the world, everything in it, especially the human person, was very, very good. And in fact, Jesus even became incarnate, took on a physical human body, lived among us and redeemed us on the cross, was resurrected and kept that physical body, and he wants to give ours back at the end of time as well. So this is not Christianity at all. This is something different. And yes, it does mention Jesus, does give some alleged sayings of Jesus. But these are all borrowed from the New Testament, and just because they talk about Jesus doesn't mean that this is a Christian gospel. Now, I shared with you in the last episode some elements from the Gospel of Thomas, some of these alleged sayings of Jesus. Just going to share a couple more here. This is saying number 36. And again, it's not a gospel in the traditional sense. There's not a narrative of the life of Jesus, things that he did. But rather, it's just a loose collection of sayings. And this is number 36 from the Gospel of Thomas. Jesus says, "Do not be anxious from morning until evening, and from evening until morning, neither about your food, what you should eat, nor about your clothing, what you should wear. You are much better than the lilies, which do not comb or spin. If you have no garment to put on, what will you put on? Who will add to your stature? It is he who will give you your garment." So just even listening to me reciting this, you can tell that this is in fact very similar to something Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. And also you can find the same idea in Luke chapter 12 about anxiety and how our faith should impact this whole topic of anxiety. We really shouldn't be living in anxiety. We should be trusting in our Lord. And as we'll see, the Gospel of Thomas actually depends on the New Testament. This is not some lost first century work that tells us anything that Jesus said before the Gospels were written down. No, it actually depends on the New Testament and copies really almost directly from it. Here's another saying from the Gospel of Thomas. This is number 39. Jesus says, "The Pharisees and the scribes took the keys of knowledge. They hid them. They neither entered nor permitted those who would enter to enter. But you be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." So once again, we see here a dead giveaway that this is a Gnostic sect, a cult of sorts. Because in the gospel, this is obviously taking something that Jesus said in Matthew chapter 23, talking about the Pharisees who shut the kingdom of heaven against people and don't allow those who would enter, who want to enter, to go in. This is Matthew 23, verse 13. But you can see here in Thomas, this is all about knowledge. Again, this gnosis, this Greek word gnosis, the idea is secret knowledge. In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus says, "Oh, the Pharisees have taken the keys of knowledge." And the implication is you can get this knowledge back if you join our little group. And this is not at all the Christ of the Gospels, because in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus talks about the kingdom. It's all about knowledge. It's all about having and possessing the secret knowledge, but it's not about what you know. I mean, that's certainly part of it. You've got to know the truth in order to do the truth, to live the truth, to pass it on. But ultimately, the kingdom is about what we do with that knowledge. Are we acting on it? Are we living out the truth of the gospel? And here's just one more saying from these 114 aphorisms of Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas. And again, they're not really from Jesus. They're alleged to be from Jesus. This is number 77. "Lift the stone, and there you will find me. Split the wood, and I am there." This is a rather bizarre saying. And some might say, well, it just simply refers to the omnipotence of God. God is everywhere. But really, it's almost pantheistic in a certain sense. You lift up the stone, there I am under the stone. I mean, what is this? It's this idea of equating God with his creation itself. And no, God is separate from his creation. But this is straight up Gnosticism. And we see this in a lot of Gnostic writings, this type of thing. So it's a dead giveaway that this is written by a Gnostic cult. When was it written? Late second century. All the evidence that we have says it was written no earlier than 175 A.D. All right, here's some reasons why we can say this, according to Dr. Craig Evans. I'm just going to give a couple of points here. But he says this in his book, Fabricating Jesus. The Gospel of Thomas knows about many of the New Testament writings, like we talked about before. Think about this. More than half of the New Testament is referenced somehow in the Gospel of Thomas. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, the Acts of the Apostles, St. Paul's letter to the Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Colossians, 1 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, the letter to the Hebrews, 1 John, the book of Revelation. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And it's kind of a reworking of New Testament materials, along with some other stuff, some Gnostic theology. And all of this is put in the mouth of Jesus, saying, oh, Jesus said this stuff. Well, it's based on the New Testament, but it takes it in a totally different direction. There are actually 14 quotes from the Gospel of Matthew in the Gospel of Thomas, 14 passages that are kind of reworked. And then there are 5 from Luke's Gospel and 5 more from the Gospel of John. That's just the Gospels. It's not even talking about all the other New Testament books that are in there somewhere. Now, what's interesting is that a lot of scholars like John Dominic Crossan will want to say, well, you know, the version of Thomas that exists now, yeah, it might have some of that stuff in it. But there was an earlier version of Thomas that's very primitive, and it came out maybe earlier than the Gospel of Mark, which was the first gospel to be written. As Dr. Evans says, this is nothing more than special pleading. There's no evidence for this. There's no evidence that there's an earlier version of the Gospel of Thomas that's far more primitive and reflects Jesus' actual words. What we do have is a document that's very, very late that depends really on the finished New Testament for its materials. So there's a lot more we could say about this, but here's another final nail in the coffin here. The Gospel of Thomas is really, it's so obvious that this is from Eastern Syrian Christianity, which really got going and started to bloom in the second century. This is really, really big. There was a Syrian writer, and again, as Christianity began to spread from Jerusalem to the very ends of the earth, one of the places where it really took root was in Syria. There was a Syrian writer named Tatian, who created one of the first, if not the very first, harmony of the Gospels. That's where you take Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you say, well, hang on here. Why do we need 4 Gospels? Let's just mash them up into one. There's a lot of similarities between Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And yeah, John's a different animal, but let's put it all together into one book. And these are known as harmonies of the Gospel. And you can find books like this where there's side-by-side texts of the Gospels. You can kind of compare them with one another. But essentially, Tatian mashed together the 4 Gospels into something he called the Diatessaron, Tatian's Diatessaron. Now, what's important for this when it comes to the Gospel of Thomas is the following. In Syria, really the only New Testament Gospels that they had were the Diatessaron. They were using this thing that Tatian wrote, and it's the Diatessaron that really informs the Gospel of Thomas. When the Gospel of Thomas is referencing the New Testament, it's essentially referencing the Diatessaron, that version of the Gospels. So this is all over the place. There are other Syrian writings that kind of make it into the Gospel of Thomas. Don't forget, Thomas is called Judas Thomas in the Gospel of Thomas. You know, there's another Syrian book called the Book of Thomas the Contender. I don't know if you've ever read that one, probably not, but it's a little bit like maybe Marlon Brando. I could have been a contender. Judas Thomas, the contender. All right. So you can see here that Syrian tradition, which really got going in the second century, is really behind the Gospel of Thomas. So this is not an early work. It's totally out of keeping with the Jewish context of the Gospels that we do have, the legitimate Gospels. And sort of puts words in Jesus' mouth that makes him sound like a Gnostic teacher of secret knowledge. That's not what he was all about. So I think we've said enough about the Gospel of Thomas, but certainly you could do more research on it on your own. The bottom line is, this is not a good source of information about the Jesus who actually walked among us, lived, died, and rose again in the first century. For that, you got to go to the New Testament Gospels. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. All right, so we spent a lot of time on the Gospel of Thomas. We're going to quickly now go through the other 4 major quote-unquote Gospels, apocryphal Gospels outside the New Testament that get a lot of press. And again, there are about 30 of these documents that are out there, but the ones that you hear about a lot in the media are the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Peter, the Egerton Gospel, the Gospel of Mary, and the secret gospel of Mark. And yeah, we will talk a little bit about the gospel of Judas as well at the end. But let's talk about now the gospel of Peter. And this is an absolutely wild story. As we continue with our series, Bogus or Biblical, the False Gospels and the Real Jesus. Well, there was an early church historian by the name of Eusebius of Caesarea who lived from about 260 AD to 340 AD. So about mid 4th century, he died. And he wrote something called Ecclesiastical History. It's one of the first, if not the earliest, history written of the early church period. And one of the things that Eusebius mentions is something called the Gospel of Peter. And here's what he says in his Ecclesiastical History. Eusebius says, quote, "Writings that are put forward by heretics under the name of the apostles containing gospels such as those of Peter and Thomas and Matthias and some others besides," end of quote. Now, of course, there were lots of false gospels out there, as I mentioned, and a lot of them purport to be from one of the 12, the actual apostles, such as the Gospel of Thomas, which we've just been talking about. Well, there's also the Gospel of Peter. Now, why would somebody want to use this pen name of Peter or Thomas? Well, it's pretty obvious because, hey, whoa, we better pay attention to this. This was written by an actual apostle. Whoa, this must carry some weight. But again, they're just borrowing the names of the apostles to try to lend credence to what they're saying. And then Eusebius starts talking about the Bishop of Antioch. The Bishop of Antioch, who was in office from AD 199, the end of the 2nd century, to the year 211 AD, the early 3rd century. And this is Bishop Serapion of Antioch. Now don't forget, Peter himself started off in Antioch before he got to Rome. He was in Antioch for some time. And that's where the believers were first called Christians. Well, here's what Serapion states during his time in office. He says, "For our part, brothers, we receive both Peter and the other apostles as Christ, but the writings that falsely bear their names we reject as men of experience, knowing that such were not handed down to us. For I myself, when I came among you, imagined that all of you clung to the true faith. And without going through the gospel put forward by them in the name of Peter, I said, if this is the only thing that seemingly causes a mean spirit among you, let it be read. But since I have now learned from what has been told me that their mind was lurking in some hole of heresy, I shall give diligence to come again to you. Therefore, brothers, expect me quickly. But we, brothers, gathering to what kind of heresy Marcianus belonged, who used to contradict himself, not knowing what he was saying, as you will learn from what has been written to you, were enabled by others who studied this very gospel, that is, by the successors of those who began it, whom we call Docetists, for most of the ideas belonged to their teaching." Okay, so he goes on, but essentially what Serapion is saying, Bishop Serapion was like, hey, when I was hanging out with you before, I heard you guys talking about this gospel of Peter, and it was causing a lot of division. At the time, I didn't think it was a big deal. But now I know more about what it's all about, and I'm convinced that it's heresy. So I'm going to come back, and I'm going to come down there, and I'm going to deal with this problem. And so this is really referring to this gospel of Peter. But here's the real question. Has the gospel of Peter actually been found? And if it has been found, what does it say? What does it really say? We're going to explore this in the next episode of The Faith Explained. It's our new series called Bogus or Biblical, The False Gospels and the Real Jesus. Hope you're enjoying it so far. By all means, if you want to drop a question or comment about the show, you can email me. The address is faith@relevantradio.com. And that's the same place you can send your questions for our Faith Explained Q&A mailbag. And we're going to open that up right now. Let's go for it. Okay, let's open up our Faith Explained Q&A mailbag. One way you can get your question to me is on the X app. You can follow me there at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Or you can email me, and the address once again is faith, F-A-I-T-H, at relevantradio.com. And today's question comes to me via email. It's from Jonerson in Northport, Florida. I have actually been to Northport, Florida. I know exactly where it is. It's the new spring training home, by the way, of the Atlanta Braves. Very nice facility there. Have not seen a game there yet, but at any rate, Jonerson is listening on the Relevant Radio app, and he writes in, "Hi, Cale. I keep hearing a lot about spiritual reading. What is the difference between this and reading the Bible, if any?" Now, that's a really good question, Jonerson, and spiritual reading is different. It is and it isn't different from Bible reading, because spiritual reading can include Bible reading, but let me explain a little bit more about what it's all about. Spiritual reading is a very, very important practice for us as Catholics, and it's something that we should engage in on a regular basis, in fact, even a daily basis. Now, scripture reading, Bible reading, should be done daily too. And the reason why we do both of these things, read the Bible, read a spiritual book of some sort on a daily basis, is the same reason that we eat every day. Just as our bodies receive daily nutrition through food, we've got to feed our souls through various means, and one of those means is through reading. St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, said, "Don't neglect your spiritual reading, because reading has made many saints." So it's one of the pathways to holiness that we can really take advantage of. And when we're reading, when we're doing spiritual reading, we are not reading necessarily for information. We're reading for formation. We really want to be formed in our faith. And one of the great advantages, I think, to spiritual reading is that sometimes it's easier to concentrate on the message than when you're listening to, say, a talk or even a homily at Mass, or even watching a video or listening to the radio. Because usually when you're reading, I guess this is probably true when you're listening to Relevant Radio, but very often it's done when you're by yourself in a very quiet place. You're hopefully free from distractions so that the message can more easily sink in. Spiritual reading, by the way, as I said, it's not the same as reading for information. So when we're talking about reading in order to study the faith, that's a bit of a different ball game as well. Well, that's really important too. It's about improving the soul's personal relationship with Jesus. So one of the great advantages of spiritual reading is that it can provide a lot of fuel for our prayer, our conversation with God. And when you're doing your spiritual reading, and I'm going to give some tips on books that you can use for this, by the way, it's good to take note of things that really strike you or speak specifically to you. One way you can really look at your spiritual reading is as a sort of spiritual direction. Now, here at Relevant Radio, we're really big on spiritual direction. We have a show called The Inner Life where spiritual directors are available and people can call in. And that's important, but I think it's really even more important to have your own personal spiritual director if possible. All throughout salvation history, God has always mandated that we be guided by others. St. Paul had a supernatural encounter with Jesus Christ. Don't forget, talk about a personal encounter on the road to Damascus. But still, Jesus commanded him to go and seek further direction, further instruction from another man, Ananias. He didn't reveal everything directly to St. Paul, although he could have. He certainly could have. And you can read more about this, by the way, in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 9. Now, of course, nothing can replace a one-on-one conversation in person with a spiritual director that you can open up your soul to, can help you find the will of God in your particular situations. But in spiritual reading, it's a lot like that, because God essentially uses a spiritual director of sorts, whoever wrote the book, and sometimes it's a book written by a saint, and this person knows the pathway to holiness. And God can speak to you through the words that you're reading. And usually with a book like this, whenever anybody writes a book, it's usually their very best material. And so it's going to be good, and it's going to be like getting the best knowledge from spiritual masters you can possibly receive. Well, how much time should you be spending on this, by the way, when you do your spiritual reading? I'd say about 10 minutes a day or so is a good target. So according to a lot of wisdom about spiritual reading, you should spend about 5 minutes per day reading the New Testament, and then about 10 minutes reading some other spiritual book. And the Old Testament could be that spiritual reading as well. A lot of people They read the New Testament for 5 minutes a day, and then they spend their spiritual reading time reading the Old Testament. That can certainly be used for spiritual reading. It is the Word of God, of course. God speaks to through the Old Testament today as much as ever. But Christians need to be much more familiar with the New to explain their faith, understand it, because of the fact that it focuses on the New Covenant in Jesus Christ. But where should you start in terms of other books? You know, there's actually a Catholic lifetime reading plan. We're going to put a link to this in the show notes, by the way. And not all the books on this list are necessarily spiritual reading books. Some are for study, some are for historical or cultural formation, but many of these books are earmarked specifically for spiritual reading. Also, if you do have a spiritual director, or you just go to a wise priest or someone that you know who you respect their faith, they might also be able to recommend to you spiritual reading books that are really good for you to begin with. Or take a look at this Catholic Lifetime Reading Plan and pick the one that maybe looks more interesting to you. The important thing, as it is with most things, whether it's starting a diet or exercise plan or anything that we're going to try to do to get better, is just to start, just to get going, just to take the first step. And one book that I would recommend that I really enjoyed for spiritual reading is The Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales. There are a lot of great modern translations that you can purchase, but there are also free versions of it because it's in the public domain on the internet. And that's a great spiritual reading book too, because it's a series of letters, spiritual direction letters, that St. Francis de Sales wrote to a housewife, and he expected her to be a canonizable saint in the middle of the ordinary duties of life, where so many of us find ourselves. So that's just a little answer. Hopefully that answers your question, Jonerson, on spiritual reading. Okay, once again, you can send your mailbag questions to me. The address is faith, F-A-I-T-H, at relevantradio.com. I'm Cale Clark. This is The Faith Explained. I'll be back later today on The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 5 p.m. Central. I'll catch you tomorrow, once again, on The Faith Explained. God bless.